This is Digital Story Podcast number 646, July 31st, 2018. Today's theme is the Sony RX100 Mark VI. You can have it all. I'm Derek Story. A subcompact with a 1-inch sensor is a luxury indeed. And for that reason alone, the Sony CyberShot DSC RX100 Mark VI digital camera is worth a look. But then add a relatively fast Zeiss Vario sonar 24 to 200 millimeter zoom, pop-up electronic viewfinder, and 4K video recording, and you have to ask yourself, what the heck is going on here? We're going to answer that question in today's TVS Photography Podcast. So this is an absolutely crazy camera, and we're going to spend a little bit of time here today talking about the super compact Sony RX100 Mark VI. Now, this is a camera that's 4 inches wide, I guess. That's the way you measure it. 4 inches on the longest side. And about 2 inches high, and actually a little less than 2 inches high, and weighs 10.6 ounces. I mean, it is a little guy. And yet, this camera has just like crazy stuff. You know, a lot of times with compact cameras, it feels like we go, okay, so we want this, so we have to give up that. We want this, so we have to give up that. I felt like that the engineers and designers at Sony said, okay, when we do this version of the RX100, which has been a very popular camera and has been good all the way through all its various iterations, we're not compromising on anything. They said, we're not giving up anything at all, and we want everything that we want in this camera. And so I started testing it. I got a loaner from B&H and as part of my business partnership with them, I got a loaner for 30 days. And I started, you know, shooting with this camera and carrying it around. It's not hard to carry around. I didn't have to change anything in my backpack at all because it's so small. Even in a pouch, it just like, I just drop it in the top pocket where I usually put my sunglasses, you know, that kind of thing. And then I would pull it out and shoot with it instead of any of my other digital cameras, you know, for a couple weeks. And I really had a lot of fun with it. And, you know, the thing that I was expecting, and I'll get into some details about the camera here in a minute, but the thing that I was expecting, you know, when I pulled it out to shoot with it, was that I was going to be giving up something to work with this camera instead of one of my normal cameras. And there are definitely some caveats that I will cover, but generally speaking, I was super impressed that I really didn't have to give up anything in terms of image quality or functionality to use this camera. So, you know, one of the themes, you know, in this particular podcast about the RX100 is that they definitely had a wish list and they found a way through just marvelous engineering to get everything in their wish list into this camera. So now the question really does come down to two things for me, and those will have to do with how it feels when you shoot with it and price. But we'll get to those in a little bit. Let's talk about the camera itself right now. So let's start out with a 1-inch sensor. I love 1-inch sensors in compact cameras. I just think they're great. You know, I'm working with a Micro Four Thirds sensor a lot of the time, which is bigger than a 1-inch, but so are the cameras. And I like Micro Four Thirds, and maybe because I'm used to working with that sensor, then I'm thinking that a 1-inch sensor in a compact is really a good deal. And I stand by that. 1-inch sensors in compact cameras are terrific. And this one gives us 20 megapixels worth of resolution. And it's a really good sensor. You know, I mean, Sony knows what they're doing in this area. Also has a great image processor. And the pipeline on this camera, you know, the way the signals move around and, you know, the way it writes and well, actually the way it performs in every function is just fast. It is a fast camera. You're not going to miss many shots. You know, it powers up quickly. It zooms quickly. It focuses quickly. It is just a fast little camera, which is, you're going, all right. You know, so, I mean, you've got this thing in your backpack or your pocket, and you see something and you pull it out, you press the button, it fires up quickly, and you're shooting. Boom. You know, no messing around. Really nice that way. Now, one of the things that I was really looking forward to testing was the lens, because as you know, if you've listened to the podcast over the years, I really like Carl Zeiss lenses. I shot with Contax film cameras back in the film days, and I shoot with them now too. And I've always had Zeiss glass in my life. But this particular little lens impressed me because it's a Vario sonar. It's a Carl Zeiss Vario sonar. And it goes from 24 millimeters on the wide end to 200 millimeters on the telephoto end. That's just the optical. We're not even getting into digital zoom or anything yet. That is just the optical range of this lens. And it has 8 aspherical elements. It has 8 aspherical elements. Oh, wow. All right. That's just nutty. But the thing that really stood out to me was that its maximum aperture on the wide end is f/2.8. And that is really quite reasonable for a compact telephoto with this reach. And I think it's pretty impressive also for a Carl Zeiss lens. I mean, the thing that I've noticed over the years using Zeiss lenses is that the quality is exceptional, but they're not always the fastest aperture lenses, especially when it comes to their zooms. The designs, I felt like Carl Zeiss has always had somewhat of a conservative approach to zooms. So the fact that you get a maximum aperture on this zoom of f/2.8, and then even when you rack it all the way out to 200 millimeters, it's f/4.5, which for a compact camera with this zooming range, that's just crazy good. So that part impressed me, and I tell you, it was really nice, and I shot indoors a lot with it. Not dark indoors, you know, nicely lit indoors, but I was indoors a lot with it. And when I was reviewing the ISOs, because I just left it in auto ISO and let the camera do its thing for the most part, when I reviewed the ISOs in the metadata, when I was looking at the shots, a lot of times it was quite low, as, you know, ISO 200, you know, in that neighborhood. And that, I go, that's really cool. And part of that is, of course, because I was shooting wide a lot, because I really liked the 24 millimeter end of that zoom. And it was at f/2.8 a lot. And so I didn't need to have that ISO go very high, which helped me again with the image quality. So that zoom lens on that camera is really something that impressed me. Again, for such a small little guy. Now, it does do a 4K video. I didn't test the video. I didn't spend much time on the video. I was having so much fun with the photography side. You know, I looked at the specs, and obviously I shot some footage and looked at it, and it does look great. I mean, you know, you can do 4K at 30p, and you're going, all right, that's nice. And I'm sure there would be instances where I really wanted that. If I had the camera all the time, I'm sure at some point I would get into the video when the situation came up. But it does have crazy good video. It has a full HD video up to 960 frames per second. It's just like, wow, you know, like what kind of processor do you have in here after all? Okay, that LCD that it has on the back. You know, let's start talking about sacrifices that you sometimes have to make for a compact form factor. One of the sacrifices tends to be at the LCD. You get a fixed back LCD, and that was a problem that I ran into with the Leica that I tested earlier this year. You know, I loved the camera, but it had a fixed back LCD, and I really discovered quickly how much I miss having an LCD that, you know, has some flip to it. This one, not a problem. It's got a tilting LCD, tilting touchscreen. It's a 3-inch tilting touchscreen. It's got this clever hinging device. So, you know, you can tilt it down, you can tilt it up, and then you can even flip it all the way over for selfies. So, I mean, it just works all the way around. Now, it doesn't swing side to side, but most folks are just fine with that, myself included. I really need it to tilt up and down. And the fact that it goes all the way over for selfies or when you're interviewing yourself and things like that, movie-wise, that's terrific. And it is a beautiful LCD. It's a 921,000 dot LCD. And the image on it is just gorgeous, just absolutely gorgeous. And it's a touchscreen too. So let's go back to compromises. So a lot of times on a camera like this, so small, you have to give up the electronic viewfinder. Not here. You also get a pop-up electronic viewfinder. And it is gorgeous. It's funny. It's so small. It's like a little periscope that just kind of boop, pops up. You have a little switch on the left side. But you look through this thing, and first of all, I was surprised, because for being so small, I didn't think that it was going to be a very enjoyable experience, and it was. It has a diopter adjustment. That really helped. And not only was the image really clean and clear through the electronic viewfinder, it also had a bunch of data in there on top and bottom, you know, things like shutter speed and aperture and all that good stuff. And I'm going, and I could read it. I could read it. So here I had, you know, the scene, and I had the data in this little thing that just pops up. And then when you don't need it, you just push it back down, and it goes back down into the body. So then you're going, okay, if I get an electronic viewfinder on a camera like this, then I have to give up the pop-up flash, because you can't have both a pop-up flash and an electronic viewfinder. Well, you do, because right next to the pop-up electronic viewfinder, you have a pop-up flash, and you have flash exposure compensation and all that good stuff. So you're just going, wow, this is really something. Let's talk about focusing. It's fast. It's a hybrid AF system, has 315 points, and it focuses really quickly. ISO goes up to 12,800. I never pushed it that high, in part because I never really needed to, because a lot of the lighting conditions I was in, the fast aperture kept the ISO. I think I did get up to 1600 and the shots look fine, but I never really pushed it much higher than that. Again, over a long term, if I had it for longer, then yeah, I would have those situations where maybe I got to test a little bit higher. But it does go up there, and my guess is with that sensor and with the processing power that they have in that camera, that it probably handles the high ISOs pretty well. So that, you know, that's like an overview of this camera. I had three things that were items of concern. Boy, I tell you, only three is amazing for a compact camera of this nature. But the first one is kind of an odd one, in that when I was shooting with it outside and I had my polarized sunglasses on, when I was holding the camera horizontally, you know, the way you normally would, and I would tilt up the LCD for composing or looking at the image or checking settings or anything, it blacked out. And it wasn't that the LCD was blacking out, it was because of my polarized sunglasses. So I was going, that surprises me, because if I turned the camera vertically, shot in portrait mode, then I could see the image with my sunglasses on. And I would think for, you know, a bunch of guys and gals who seem to have thought of everything for this camera, that they would have the blackout happen vertically, because we don't shoot vertically as often as we do horizontally, especially for a camera that shoots video. They had it blacking out horizontally. So that surprised me. So I would either have to, you know, angle it vertically or just put my sunglasses up on my forehead and look at the image. And I thought that was odd. I really did. I thought that was a kind of an odd situation. The second thing, and this is not their fault, but it was a real thing for me, and that is the super small size. And one of the things that I really felt over the couple weeks that I was shooting with it is that the physical experience of taking pictures with this camera wasn't as satisfying as with the cameras that I normally use. And the cameras that I normally use, I mean, they range from the EM1 Mark II, which has this big grip and everything and super comfortable camera. But I also shoot with the Pen F, the Olympus Pen F, the OMD EM10 Mark II, which is a very compact camera. But again, it definitely has more physicality than this camera. And, you know, I was just sort of noticing that, and I'm not going to compare it to my film cameras because that's not fair. I wasn't having as much fun in terms of the tactile experience of holding this in my hand when I was shooting with the RX100 as I was with my normal cameras. The reason why I say that's not Sony's fault at all, because the whole design concept of this camera was to have something ultra compact that was very powerful. And so you have to go off what the design intent was, which was to create a super compact camera. And they did it magnificently. So I'm not going to ding them on, you know, it being too small to be comfortable in my hands, at least for everyday use. But the reason why I bring this up is because it sort of ties to the next point that I'm going to bring up, which is price tag. It is expensive. It is an expensive camera. You can get it right now for $1,198. So let's just say $1,200. $1,200 for this camera, which is a lot for a compact camera. It's a lot for any camera. You know, my EM10 Mark II, my Olympus EM10 Mark II, I can get it with a zoom lens for roughly half the price, right, with a bigger sensor. But again, it's not super compact like this guy is. $1,200 is a lot. And so here was the kind of the tug of war for me. That if I spend $1,200 on a camera, I'm going to want to shoot with it a lot. Now the RX100 is perfect for travel, super nimble camera, business trips, throw it in the briefcase, you know, that kind of stuff. But for me, you know, for everyday use, which is what I would want from a camera that I spent that much on, I'm probably going to reach for my Pen F, or I'm probably going to reach for the OMD before I reach for the RX100 if I'm carrying my backpack with me and I have my tools with me, just because it's more pleasurable. It's more fun to shoot with a camera that has that nice feel in your hands than something that's so small and, you know, kind of slippery, in all honesty. So, you know, that's kind of like the weird crossroads for me. If you really needed that compact camera, a super small size, then for sure this camera ticks off all the boxes in terms of what it can do. And, you know, the image quality was beautiful with it. The fact of the matter is that shooting experience combined with the price tag is sort of an odd thing to be, you know, dealing with here. I'll let you ponder that for a second. Let me just talk about JPEGs and RAWs, and then we'll come back and do a wrap on that particular thought. So I could only shoot JPEGs, or I could only view JPEGs. I actually shot JPEG plus RAW with the camera, but I don't have anything that can interpret the RAW files yet. Lightroom doesn't, Capture One Pro doesn't, Luminar doesn't, Photos doesn't. So I just kept the RAW files. I have them, you know, and I can refer to them once, you know, RAW compatibility is, you know, supported in those apps that I use. So I was looking at the fine JPEGs, and I have to say the image quality was really quite good. So what I did was, so that you could get a peek at this, was that I also published an article on the Digital Story, a review of this camera. And, you know, I talk about in the review a lot of the stuff that I talk about on the podcast, but it also has sample images captured by the camera. And what I did is they are full resolution, unedited, and I put them on Flickr. So the links, obviously, to all the images are, you know, in the article. You just click on it, it takes you over there. So you can really take a look at these things, you know, these JPEGs as they came out of the camera, and look at them in full resolution without any image editing at all. Nothing, no cropping, no sampling, no nothing. Do that, because I have to tell you, they're pretty impressive. I actually, a lot of times, am uncomfortable publishing images straight out of the camera, even for a review, because I always want to do a little something to them, right? I always want to do. And these, I just really didn't feel the need to do anything to them at all, even though I wouldn't, because they're review images. I just let them be, and I was fine with it. They were great. They look great. This image quality with the JPEGs is quite good. Now, with the RAWs, I just can't speak to that yet because I haven't seen them. I have to say that I anticipate that they will be good, but I don't know for sure until I actually get to see them. And, you know, who knows? Sometimes we have to wait a little while for, you know, RAW compatibility, and sometimes it comes quicker, but as of this podcast, I don't have it yet. All right, so now you've had a little time to ponder this, how often you're going to use it versus the price tag issue. And I think that's what this camera comes down to. It really does. Because in terms of value for what you get, it's worth $1,200. The lens, the sensor, the speed, the image quality, electronic viewfinder, LCD, everything. I mean, it is a beautiful, finely crafted, and somewhat of a miracle kind of camera, in the same way that an iPhone is a miracle when you really think about all the things that it can do and how well it does them. So it is worth the $1,200 in terms of, you know, what you're getting in the package. Is it worth $1,200 in terms of your real life, in terms of how often you're going to use it, in terms of explaining it to your partner? and this is the way I ended the article in the Digital Story. Well, I'll just read it to you. So here's the last paragraph in the review on the Digital Story. So then, what is the answer to the question? Is it worth it? I can say, yes, it is. But is the Sony RX100 Mark VI for you? Well, that depends on your credit card balance, disposable income, and yes, the most important person in your life who might see you using this and ask, oh, that's a cute camera. How much did it cost? And for me, that's really what it comes down to. It's the price tag versus usability. If you go ahead and take the leap, I would love to hear from you after you have a chance to shoot with it and see what you think. Nauticam releases underwater housing for the Sony RX100 Mark VI. So this just came out today. So the timing was nice on that. But F-Stoppers reports, while the pocket-sized camera is clearly ideal for travel, the NA RX100 VI housing is just as practical. Weighing 2.3 pounds, you'll be happy to hear that the system will take up very little space and weight in your carry-on or checked baggage. As an aside, don't check it. If you like deep dives, the underwater housing can be taken to a depth of 380 feet, 100 meters. It's a nice selling point, but how many divers go to such depths? The housing ships with a standard interchangeable port, which was not found on earlier versions of the Sony RX100 underwater housing line. The standard port allows for use of the full zoom range up to 200 millimeters and can be equipped with an M67 flip diopter holder, which also allows photographers to add the SMC1 super macro converter for shooting the tiniest ocean critters. The new NA RX100 Mark VI is priced at $1,100 and is available to order now through the Nauticam website. So this is kind of cool. So not only do you have a super compact travel camera in the RX100, if you're a diver, or even if you're a serious snorkeler, you can get an exceptional underwater housing for it for another $1,100. In the world of diving, you know, your total package then is $2,300 for a camera that is fantastic topside and I would think would be pretty darn good under the water, you know, with its image quality. Based on the image quality that I saw from my images, I would imagine it would just be great underwater as well. So anyway, so that's available. And that's another thing to think about. If you're sort of an on-the-go person, kind of an adventure type, you like to go in and out of the water while you're traveling, could be a killer combination. No longer waiting for my Canon rebate. So here's the deal. Way back on June 11th podcast, I said I'm taking the Canon rebate challenge, did all my stuff, sent it in, and this last week, I got it. But it was interesting, and I posted an article in the Digital Story, so if you want to read all the details about this, the article is there. What they sent me was a MasterCard debit card. They call it a debit card, although you use it as a credit card, with $250 loaded on it. And I have until the end of January 2019 to use this card. I cannot use it at an ATM for cash, and I can't use it at a gas station. And then I've had some readers respond on the Facebook page when I talked about the article that I wrote. They said that every now and then they've had instances where they couldn't use it online in specific situations. But generally speaking, it's a card that I can use to buy stuff with, $250 worth of stuff. And I have a MasterCard version. And then someone else wrote and commented that they got theirs also. They also took the Canon challenge about the same time I did. And they got an American Express gift card or debit card or whatever you want to call it. Pretty interesting thing. I would love to know what goes on behind the scenes at Canon for this program. I bet you it's pretty interesting. But I did get the card. It did have the proper amount on it, $250. I seem to be ready to go. So case closed. I took the Canon rebate challenge. It worked out great. Happy ending. It was a fun project. I hope you enjoyed it too. Nikon counts down to its new mirrorless camera. Well, unless you've been living under your camera bag all week, you know that Nikon officially announced when it's going to announce its new mirrorless camera. And DP Review reports, following an earlier leak, Nikon has officially started the clock on a countdown to its upcoming special event, widely assumed to be the launch of a new mirrorless system. The timer is counting down to 1 p.m. on the 23rd of August, Tokyo time. That's midnight in New York, 5 a.m. in London, and 9 p.m. on the previous day for the DP Review office here in Seattle. So yes, on August 23rd, depending on where you are, you will find out what this new Nikon mirrorless camera is all about. We're anticipating full frame. We're anticipating a new lens mount for the camera, and we're anticipating something much better than what they've done in the past with their mirrorless cameras. And if they get it right on this mirrorless camera, I think it's going to be interesting, and especially when we compare to whatever Canon's going to do. And then, as I talked about in the earlier podcast, then the response that we know is already in the works from FOPs, from Fuji, Olympus, Panasonic, and Sony. We already know what, they're working on stuff. So I think it's going to be really fun, but I'm dying to see what Nikon does with this release. We only have to wait till the 23rd. Do you have a film camera that needs a good home? So I have a great story for you. I had a lady come by today. Her name is Bev. She came by the studio, contacted me a few days back. Her husband actually wrote me and said, "Hey, are you the guy that takes film cameras and finds people who want them?" I thought, oh, wow, this is kind of cool. So I said, "Yes, I'm the guy." Wrote him back. And he said, "Okay, well, I've got some stuff. And, we've tried to give it away to schools and stuff. And nobody seems to want it." And I said, "I'll take it." Bev came over today, his wife. And she had some goodies for me, and it was nice. It was like a Canon SLR and some Canon lenses, and there was a Tamron lens in there, 28 millimeter for Nikon F-mount. It had some, like, cool stuff in there. And I was talking to her and said, well, you know, so how did you find out about me again? She's going, it was really funny. I was at the doctor, and I don't remember specifically what type of doctor it was, but whoever you are, you know, because you listen to the podcast. They were talking photography, and the idea of film cameras came up, and I think she talked to that. She had the stuff. And he said, yeah, I know someone that would be interested in them because he listens to the podcast. So she doesn't even listen. And he told her, and she's going, oh, great. Well, he's actually in Santa Rosa. And she goes, so am I. And so that's how she found out about me. She sent me, or her husband sent me an email, and off we go. So I just thought that was so funny. You know, we're so global in one sense, and then we're so local in another sense. And this is sort of a combination of both. But the bottom line is they had some fun stuff and she got it to me and I had a nice conversation with her and I thanked her very much. And I'll be able to get that stuff into the hands of people after I test it and clean it up and, you know, do all the stuff I have to do. If you have film cameras languishing in your closet and you want to find a place for them, I'm your guy and you know how to get a hold of me. And again, I will take good care of the stuff. I'll get it all cleaned up. I'll test it. All the stuff that eBay sellers don't do and have it ready to go. And then I'll find a good home for it through the film camera shop. And this project is just turning out to be so much fun. Look me up if you got something. Use the contact form on the Nimble Photographer, thenimblephotographer.com, or go to the link in the show notes. Let me know what you have and we'll take it from there. All right, just a couple of little virtual camera club things. First of all, big thanks to all the members of our inner circle for supporting this podcast. I'm working on something fun for you. Panasonic came out with a new tough camera, and I have one coming to me. And I thought, wow, this will be kind of fun to do more of a hands-on thing, right? Because it's a physical camera. Your bonus for next month, for August, is going to be a hands-on review of this camera with me, you know, dunking it and dropping it and doing all that kind of stuff, showing you the features. But it looks like a really nice camera and I should have it here within a few days. So I won't have the video ready right at the first, but as soon as I get the camera, I'll do the video. And then obviously you'll get notice through the Patreon site about it. And we'll have some fun with this. So it's just, you know, I'm always looking for ways to say thank you for supporting this podcast and for being an Inner Circle member. And that's what we're going to do for August. I'll keep you posted through Patreon. If you're interested in supporting this podcast and supporting all the work that I do, then just go to the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Go over to the site. You'll see what's going on. A big thanks to our friends at Red River Paper for also supporting this podcast and supporting the work that I do, the printing work that I do, and, you know, really serving as my consultant for everything printing. Just such a great resource to have. And not only do I have them, but you have them as a resource. You have them as a resource through the Facebook page, through their own site that has tons of information. You can contact them. They are the printing experts in our world. And they are your printing experts as well. Red River Paper, they have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. They have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. And they are a joy to work with, and their paper is fantastic. All right, that's going to do it for me today. A lot of fun with that little camera. Interesting, you know, what everyone's going to think about the price versus, you know, what you get with it. But bottom line is, Sony really did a good job with it. Really good camera, the Sony RX100 Mark VI. Next week, I've got a cool interview coming up for you. I think you'll really enjoy it. So make sure you come back and join me. Until then, have a great week. Take some pictures. See you next Tuesday.